It's KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. Here's a story you've heard before. Artists move into a cheap neighborhood, hip coffee shops and boutiques open, condo developments pop up, rich people move in, artists get pushed out. Surely that story must resonate with Seattle painter Jane Richlovsky. She was one of the artists who had to move out of the 619 Western Avenue warehouse so the State Department of Transportation could bring in the tunnel boring machine Bertha.
What was interesting was that DOT has to compensate businesses that they're evicting for a highway project. It's federal law, and there's money set aside for that. But that's not actually what made it in the paper. The story seemed to like tap this well of nostalgia and myth about these bohemians in their shivering in their ghettos
and you martyred
in their garrets for their art.
Yes,
and that was pretty much it. Stopped there, and it also was this nostalgia for place that people had. You know, people who hadn't set foot in the building for 20 years, if ever, we're like, no, we can't lose that, you know, which, you know, it happens when like a restaurant closes as well.
Right. You've nailed Seattle.
I think that's pretty universal.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, it was not the story that they were telling in the media. It was not the story that we were living. So it got after.
Well, what were you living?
Well, what I was living was filling out a lot of forms, talking to a lot of real estate brokers, looking at property, talking to contractors, figuring out how I could use my relocation money to build new studios. And I also, I kind of wanted to game the system a little bit more by having, there was a bunch of us and a bunch of us that were all separate businesses, so we kind of coordinated the move and coordinated the remodel of this space that I'd found in order to kind of maximize our benefits. And so it was extremely what they call left brain thinking, but it was pretty. It was still a creative experience. I had to be very creative to do this in 6 weeks. So that was the reality I was living. Was talking to a lot of bureaucrats and contractors and haranguing people left and right and figuring out budgets and stuff.
Okay, so Jane, you got some Bertha relocation money, but how much does this apply to other artists?
Exactly. So the principle applies, which is that, you know, we use the resources at hand. And that's something like that artists did to even end up in that building in the first place. It was an abandoned warehouse. Nobody wanted it. And somebody talked to the landlord and said, hey, can I rent this? And then they brought some more people in. And then, I mean, that's kind of where I cut my teeth in developing artist studios, because I took over leases for people and sublet to about 20 different people, and had the whole building was actually managed by like 7 different artists. We were master leaseholders. We were leasing from someone else, but we were all already in business as it was. So we were using available resources. So my point is that artists are very crafty about using available resources. Artists are crafty, but we do it with physical materials and found things in our work all the time. And so there's other resources out there. And this was a resource that just kind of fell in our lap.
So then if nobody knows resourcefulness like an artist, why is there this, I don't know, you didn't use the word whiny, or I don't know, defeatist?
No, okay, yeah.
But, you know, why?
Fatalistic
is a much better word. Yeah. Why do you think that artists are often so fatalistic about surviving in Seattle, the unaffordable Seattle?
Or anywhere. I mean, the Lower East Side of New York,
yes.
Anywhere. I think that it applies to a lot of things in their life relating to business. And that's that they have this received idea of, in order to be creative, you have to be bad at business and flighty and unpredictable. And we've been taught that that's somehow a precursor to creativity, you know? And it's like, well, Van Gogh was crazy, but it's like a lot of people were crazy that never painted.
Yes.
And a lot of people painted who were never crazy.
Yeah.
But we use that confirmation bias to say like, oh, look how flighty they are. They're an artist. And
right.
Then you internalize that.
They're soulful.
Yeah, they're soulful. And you know, whatever. Lots of people are soulful. You know, we're people who happen to want to, I'm talking about visual artists here, but people who want to use it to make some cultural artifact is what sets us apart. And and want to do it full time. So maybe that's crazy, but not in the sense of raving mad crazy. But I think that there's this perception that like the inverse is true, that if you're good at these things, that you're not a real artist. And that fear goes really deep. And you worry about it in people's perception of you and that it's not good for your career. I mean, that's why you have people who, you know, a successful artist playing up that crazy mythic artist.
Yes. Otherwise, yeah. You're an operative, you're a sellout, or you're, right, you're a commercial.
Right.
You're very commercial.
Commercial. And it's pretty recent, you know, it's a pretty recent prejudice, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
The idea of like art and money having to be separate. And, you know, in the Renaissance, those guys didn't work for free. You know, all of the great masterworks of art that we know were done for as gigs. You know, they were patrons.
They
were commissioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, we have to deal with the reality of money in our lives all the time anyway.
So then what's a, dare I say, struggling Seattle artist to do? What's your advice?
I would say if you're in a situation that you like, figure out how to, then you're renting a studio, buy it. Number two.
That sounds easy, by the way. Buy it?
I have actually, there's people that have.
Okay.
And there's people that should have done it back in the 70s.
Right.
The people who are really nostalgic about those really cheap storefronts they had, I'm like, you know, that would have been the time to do that. But
yeah, but now you're telling people to buy Seattle real estate in 2017?
There's an artist-owned complex down at Georgetown that was started by an artist, Sam Ferrazzano, and he got some creative financing. There's a lot of Small Business Administration money that's out there. You band together with other artists, but also band together with people who know what they're doing in terms of real estate. And there's people that want to help. What I did was formed a partnership. So buying the building last year, had nothing to do with the DOT money. That was finding a developer to partner with. And his interest, Greg Smith from Urban Visions, his interest was that he owns real estate in the neighborhood, and there's people that want to move into it because of its character.
Mm.
So if you obliterate the character and all the tech people see are other tech people, then that's actually, you know, diminishes the value of it.
So there you're taking advantage of a public association we have with artists. You're valuable.
We're valuable.
We love you.
Exactly. And we should know our value that way. And that value is actually quantified. I mean, I think we have to get more savvy to use that power and use that value.
That value.
And cash it in.
Yes.
Cash in on it. And that requires changing a lot of people's mindsets and changing the mindset that we're like this charity that has to be taken care of, but that we're actually actors and be like, and cash the check.
Do you have no fear that you're...
No fear, none.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah, no,
do you have any insecurity or self-doubt about, have I gotten savvy in commercial? Let me put it this way. Do you ever wonder whether your commercial savvy has changed your art? And if so, would it be for the worse?
I definitely know that it does affect some people's perception of it.
Uh-huh.
That's an issue that there's nothing I can do about that.
You've gotten that from people?
I can just tell.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, that I'm asked to be on committees that have to do with real estate and business, and I'm not asked to be on committees that have to do with actual art, even though I've been showing in galleries for 20 years and have grants to my name and everything. I've gotten this other identity.
Yes.
It's more that I'm stuck in that identity than anything. And, you know, that's subtle. But the internal part, I think, is the more interesting one. And that's something that, sure, who doesn't have doubts and hesitations? You always have a lot of insecurities that you're not a real artist.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's almost everybody does. And so that's just yet another thread of that and another thing that feeds that when you're feeling down anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's that separate from any other kind of insecurity, frankly.
And what about just the amount of time you end up spending being in business instead of creating?
Yes. Exactly. That's been an issue, but I think of right now, I mean, and you are anyway, if you're an artist and you're a working artist, you have to devote, you know, almost half your time to the business side of it anyway. depending on, you know, where you're at in your career. So that's a given. But this, what I'm doing now, this more this advocacy, I think of it as more as community work. And it, I also think of it as something that will pay off in the end. It's already paid off in the fact that I didn't have to move from my studio, from this studio, and I probably won't have to. And that's a lot of energy and time that I'm saving that way. So there's that. But there is, it's definitely, the hours in the day is an issue. The hours in the day is a big issue, but I feel like we're at this crisis point and I want to do something about it. I don't want to just sit there and whine.
If you're listening, if you're not an artist, but you're in the city, do you care what decisions, what creative business decisions your city's artists make?
Well, I can talk from my own experience in my own neighborhood that it, I think it does make a difference that you walk down the street and you run into people on a regular basis who have decided to devote their lives to making something beautiful. You know, whatever, that sounds sentimental or something, but it's really true. Like, that's what we do. And we've made a sacrifice to do that. But I don't want to focus on the sacrifice. I want to focus on what it is we're actually trying to do. And I think that the reason that, like, urban planners want us around in the beginning is we're on the, you know, we're eyes on the street. We do funky things. We paint murals or whatever. All that stuff that they want to expect younger artists to do for free. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, let's take that and be like, well, if you actually have people in the neighborhood that are established artists and you pay them, maybe they will make a beautiful piece of public art that actually has something that's organic to that neighborhood. That's one example. What we're going to do outside of our building is put in one of those parklet things.
Yep.
And we'll have art classes there. We can be out there sketching. People can join us. I mean, it's not going to be 24/7 because obviously we have to work, but we can add a little bit of that element to people's daily lives.
Seattle artist Jane Richlovsky has been painting narrative works on patterned textiles for almost 20 years and making a living at her art. She owns an artist studio building in Pioneer Square. You can hear more from Jane if you're on Whidbey Island tomorrow, because she's giving a talk for Humanities Washington at the Langley Library on Whidbey tomorrow at 6:30. That talk is titled, When Artists Get Together, They Talk About Real Estate.